Oh, hey! Before we continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter novels, just a few quick announcements. First, I'm excited to announce that I'm going to be a part of Vancouver Podfest in November. So on November 10th, which is a Saturday, for 4 hours, I will be a part of a Harry Potter extravaganza. I will be joining fellow Harry Potter podcast hosts, Hannah from Witch Please, and the entire team from Flipendo. We'll be doing some panels about our shows, we'll be doing some trivia, and we're going to have debates over heated subjects such as Put Outer versus Deluminator, and Do the Students Wear Clothes Under Their Robes? It's going to be very fun. There'll be more information online, but if you happen to be in the Vancouver area in November and you want to come through, I'd love to see you. Second, in a bit of personal news, I'll be moving to New York in about a week, which is very exciting. It's something I've been trying to do for a long time. Kelly and I have been long distance for 2 years, which is less than fun, so I'll be closer to her, which will be great, and I'll also be closer to a bunch of fine folks from Multitude. Multitude is the audio collective that Potterless is a part of, and there are 5 podcasts under Multitude currently. There's Potterless, there's Spirits, which is a drunken dive into myths and legends, there's Join the Party, which is a captivating story told through Dungeons & Dragons, there's Waystation, which is a Lost Girl fan cast, and then there's Horse, the other show that I'm a part of, that is a basketball podcast about everything except for the actual basketball. So if you want to learn more about those shows, you can go to multitude.productions. They are great podcasts made by great people, all centered around storytelling. And if you are caught up on Potterless and you need more things to listen to, I highly recommend a show from Multitude. Also, today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Stitch Fix and Backblaze. I'll be talking about those more at the middle of the show, but thank you so much for supporting me. And speaking of supporting me, we have new patrons to welcome to the team. So shout out to Ellen Jamieson, Polly Burridge, Jake Hamel, Amanda Megan, Nicole Infanzone, Nathan Bryant, Hadassah Penn, Melissa Suffel, Nora Stefanak, Katia Ravenclaw, Casey Perkins, Lola Mendeloff, Dayton Smith, Rachel Richter, Laura Krauss, Noreen Sidon, Casey Vanacek, Taylor Fulton, Michaela Springer, Kate Shoemaker, Kristen Campbell, Dorothy Yap, Tuffle Tuffeman, Ash Prosser, Emma DeWitt, Emily Reeves, Esther Mori, Ulrike Schulte, Nicole Kiedis, Sam Poling, Phoebe Caradori, Shayna Larson, Adam Graham, Julia, and Julie Pagano. Shout out to Crystal Powell, who upgraded her pledge, and a huge shout out to our newest producer level patrons, Brenna, Jackie Clear and Drake Perez. They join the ranks of Leanne, Vicky, Aaron, Erica, Calvin, Sadie, Jesse, Natalie, Deborah, Clow, Alex, Frank, Marchismo, Tori, Samantha, Juan, Jenna, Kieran, Luis, Akanksha, Rebecca, Abid, Caitlin, Benjamin, Rosemarie, Jill, Marie, Eliza, Ariel, Romina, Camille, Anthony, Diego, Russell, Jenny, Dustin, Katie, Audra, Indiana, Eleanor, Sydney, Billy, Rossanne, Micah, Andrea, Nikita, Colette, Chrissy, Shrina, Lala, Chelsea, Taylor, Sammy, Lofkesh, Shivani, Ali, Cowmage, Cassandra, Roxy, Amelia, Sean, Jeremiah, Courtney, Sarah, Jesus, Ben, Francisco, Rachel, Mary, Marcus, Zachary, Gabrielle, Jessica, Natalie, Arna, Brandy, Melody, Kristen, Jonathan, Lexi, Zach, Elisa, Daisy, Jessica, Orchid, Jonathan, Joe, Isabel, Steve, Vivian, Kim, Samuel, Ali, Sean, Victoria, Kyla, Elena, Heather, Takari, and Darlene, who make impeccable first slices when scooping out a pie. If you want to be like one of these amazing people and get access to bonus episodes, exclusive merchandise, my notes, streams, you can go to patreon.com/potterless. And speaking of, we just hit over 500 patrons, meaning I'm going to Disney World, kind of. I'm going to Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida, to check out both Harry Potter parks. One is a celebration for finishing the books, and two, to do research, because I'm for sure doing episodes of Potterless about the park, obviously. So thank you everyone so much for that support. I'm very excited to go on that trip. But without further ado, let's get into episode 51 of Potterless, covering chapters 21 and 22 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, guest starring my sister, Megan Fruhoff. Hello, internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the journey of a grown man reading the Harry Potter series for the first time. My name is Mike Schubert. I'm that grown man, and I am back with my beloved older sister, Megan, who is here to discuss more of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince with me. These two chapters, super meaty. Oh my goodness, things are getting real. Megan, how are you feeling about what we're about to discuss?
I mean, so good. I'm so happy about these chapters. I mean, I really liked the last chapter too. I'm just, there's a lot of treasure in this, I guess.
Yeah, there really is. So let's get right into it. Chapter 21 is called The Unknowable Room, which I think it's fun that we've had The Unbreakable Vow and now The Unknowable Room. Harry is trying to think of ways in which to persuade Slughorn, and he decides that he is going to look in his potions book because, yeah, that'll be in there.
He's grasping at straws here.
He really is. But it's not like the Half-Blood Prince wrote, well, if you're trying to persuade one of your professors to tell you one of his deepest, darkest secrets, use this potion. Like, oh, Harry, come on.
Well, I think maybe he's hoping that, like, the previous owner had Slughorn for a teacher. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yes. So Hermione says, you're not going to have any luck looking in that book. Harry says, hey, without this book, Ron would be dead. And Hermione says, not if you just listen to Snape in your first year. I'm sorry, have you met Harry before, Hermione? This was never a possibility. This is
Hermione
never going to happen.
Hermione just wants to prove her point that she's right about the book and like, be like, no, it's evil. It's evil. You should have just read it on your own.
Yeah. I don't think she even cares that it's evil. She just doesn't like that it's cheating. Yes, like, it's really exactly. Just an academic thing for her. While Harry's looking through the book, he finds written in the margins an incantation called Sectum Sempra, which sounds familiar. And I don't know if we've come across it yet or if it's something that I have just heard of before. But the name Sectum Sempra stood out to me. And yeah. I don't know if it's been discussed or if it's just one of those things. Like, I knew that Horcrux was a word, but I didn't know what it was. So has it been used before this point?
No, it hasn't.
Okay, then it's got to be like Horcrux where people have talked about it. I don't know what it means.
I mean, maybe people have talked about it. You haven't come across it yet.
The other thing it might be is that maybe the Latin just sounds familiar to me because I think Sempra means always.
Oh, okay.
Because like Semper Fi means like always whatever. So yeah, Sempra means always. And then Google is telling me that Sectum means to cut. So I guess it would mean like to always cut. Oh no, that would be really mean if it's some sort of spell that just like continually, oh, maybe it's like that torture thing where just like slowly cuts away from you. I don't know. This sounds gross. And I am not surprised if this is what it means because the Half-Blood Prince has written next to it four enemies. So
yes.
It's gotta be some sort of evil thing. But yeah, Sectum Semper is Latin for cut always. Ugh. That sounds really rough. I'm excited to see how that comes into play.
Yeah.
Harry breezes over that, but the apparition test is coming up soon. Ron is very nervous.
Typical Ron.
Yeah, typical Ron to be scared. There are additional practice sessions, though, that the students can take at Hogsmeade, and Hermione and Ron decide that they're going to. This isn't even a possibility for Harry, though, because by the time the test comes around, which is April 21st, Harry won't be 17, so he won't be age, so he can't take it anyway. He's gonna have to take it in the summer,
which is a bummer. That it just reminds you, I guess, that Harry's even like younger than most of his class.
Exactly. Harry calms Ron down by saying that doing the extra classes will be fine. In absolute worst case, you can just take the test again when Harry has to take it in the summer, so it's really not that big of a deal.
No, but Ron's still freaking out because he's Ron.
He's Ron Weasley. So Harry keeps trying to think.
Well, he's mostly like afraid of his siblings making fun of him if he fails, I think.
Yeah, literally he is just afraid of Fred and George making fun of him because the only person that didn't do it on their first try was Charlie, but Charlie is bigger than them, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So they were too scared to give him crap. Harry keeps trying to think of ways to get Slughorn to spill. Hermione makes the argument that Harry's going about it the wrong way. Since Harry is the one that was asked to do the task, Dumbledore probably had a reason, meaning that Harry is probably the only one that can do it. Harry should try to persuade it out of him, not try to use some sort of charm or potion or spell, because if that was the case, anybody could have done it, and Dumbledore probably would have asked someone more suited to actually get this done.
Yes.
I think Hermione is spot on here. Harry doesn't need to try to think of anything tricky. He just needs to literally persuade it out of Slughorn.
With his Harry Potter charm.
Oh, which he has none of. So Ron is struggling with an essay that he is writing because his spell check quill from Fred and George is going all wonky, and Hermione says, no worries, I'll help fix it. And Ron, in response, says, I love you, Hermione. Definitely like a friendly, joking kind of way, but Hermione still blushes and turns pink.
And also, one of the words he's trying to spell arguery or something, and it starts to spell O-R-G, like he's about to write orgy.
Oh, I did not even pick up on that. Nice, Megan.
Way to catch that your quill is failing in time before you hand that in to a professor.
The word, so it's like, how do you spell belligerent? It can't start B-U-M. And he says, no.
No.
And then she notices that earlier in the essay, when he tried to write Dementors, it said Doug Bob. And when it tried to say Ron Weasley, it said Runel Waslin. So, yeah, not necessarily a functioning quill.
Definitely
the
not.
Spell is clearly worn off on it. So after blushing at Ron saying, I love you, she says, don't let Lavender hear you say that. Harry asks, yeah, Ron, why don't you just end it? And Ron replies, you haven't ever chucked anyone, have you? Which I love that the British word for saying dump someone is to chuck them. That is way more intense. It makes me think of literally chucking, throwing away something that you are done using. Like, ah, done with this one, chuck it to the side. Which I guess dumping is the same thing.
Yeah. But chucking does sound like a little bit worse.
Yeah, because chucking thinks of like violently throwing something. If I were to chuck something or say that I chuck something, I would have thrown it far away from me. Where dumping could mean just kind of letting something down.
Or dumping it in like a dump truck or something.
Yeah, at least that is just tipping something over. Chucking is forcibly throwing away. So I think it's pretty funny. And then shout out to Ron here because he's basically bringing up the point. You've never done this before, Harry. You and Cho just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
I wish that would happen for me. And as we discussed in our previous episode, it's a lot easier when things just kind of wither away than it is to actively make the decision, especially if it's your first ever time breaking up with someone. While they're having this discussion, Creature and Dobby apparate in. They spill ink all over Ron's essay, which is amazing. They are there to report their findings of tailing Malfoy. But it takes a really long time for Harry to get an answer out of them because Creature is being way too lovey-dovey about Malfoy.
Of course.
Dobby is being way too mean about Malfoy and lovey-dovey about Harry Potter. So they both are talking for way too long, and Harry can't get an answer out of either of them. It's really great. Creature says, Master Malfoy moves with a nobility that befits his pure blood. His features recall the fine bones of many mistresses, and his manners are those of... And Dobby has to butt in and say, Draco is a bad boy! And Harry goes, okay, yeah, we don't need to hear about you being in love with Malfoy. You tell me what happened, Dobby. Super great.
Even though Harry's, like, a little bit in love with Malfoy,
I mean,
too.
Super in love.
I mean, I still think he's more in love with Tom Riddle, like Tom Riddle version of Dumbledore, because he's so handsome.
Don't worry, I mix up saying Voldemort and Dumbledore all the time. I've had multiple episodes of Potterless where I will have to re-record me when I'm editing saying the word Voldemort instead of Dumbledore, because I don't know, there's just something, they're the same number of syllables,
similar.
They're kind of similar, they're both very powerful wizards, so especially... There was one of the, when I was doing the episode about the duel between Dumbledore and Voldemort, I kept calling the other one. So I had to, while I was editing, re-record it. And that's always really fun because then I'm basically doing an impression of myself.
Yeah.
Because I have to listen to the sentence that I said, but then say Voldemort instead of Dumbledore. And I have to keep doing takes to make it sound not
like
bad because I want the editing to sound smooth. So I have to keep doing it. So I'm doing an impression of myself. It's very strange. It's not enjoyable.
Sounds horrible.
No, you know, I really want these episodes to sound good, and I don't want to get yelled at on Twitter, so it's the price I pay.
Well, we appreciate the lengths that you go through, because it's not like when you're watching like a TV movie and they're trying to cover up the curse word and it doesn't flow at all.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm tired of these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane, my favorite. I feel like it was always worse with the 80s movies, like when
Definitely.
Dad would show us The Breakfast Club, it was always way worse. I think because at the time those movies came out, PG could be whatever. Like, we watched a National Lampoon movie, and it was PG, and it showed the mom's boobs in it.
Yeah.
This was a PG movie in the 80s, so then later when they're on TV, they have to think, oh, right, we can't be saying these words, but we didn't have Judd Nelson repeat his lines, or Emilio Estevez redo the lines for when we do the TV version, so they had to get these other people, and it never sounded good.
No, it
never
good.
Ever. The best
good.
One being in The Breakfast Club, specifically when the principal, or vice principal, whatever the guy is, he's really mean to Bender, and calls him out for his bad family situation and then leaves the room. There's a part where he screams, and you can see because the video clearly shows that he screams, fuck you, at the top of his lungs.
Right.
But there's this other voice that's like, screw you!
Yeah.
It's so bad. It's so off.
It's like, you probably just should have cut that out like it was a sex scene or something.
Yeah, or just bleep it or silence it would be better than trying to get the other word in there, honestly.
Yes.
So finally, Harry can get an answer out of Creature and Dobby, and he learns that Malfoy has been using the Room of Requirement, which I can't believe I didn't think of. That's why he's disappearing from the map.
I know.
Which, ugh.
I'm kicking myself for not realizing
that. I can't believe you didn't realize that when you were like talking about it. And I was like, come on, Mike. Come on.
I still think Hogsmeade is involved, and I will get into this later because the end of this chapter is very suspicious.
Okay.
Harry learns that it's a Roomer requirement because Dobby mentions him going down the 7th floor corridor with a variety of students. And Harry goes, oh, right, because that's where the Roomer requirement is. Harry finally puts it together and wants to bust into the room. Hermione says that this isn't going to work because he doesn't know what Malfoy's using it for. The reason that Malfoy was able to bust in on their DA meetings is because Malfoy knew what they were doing. So when he walked up to the room, he thought, I need this to be where the secret meeting is happening. And then he was correct.
Right.
Whereas Harry doesn't know what he's doing. So the room is not going to turn into what it needs to be. The door's never going to show up. It's just going to stay that wall the whole time.
I have a question, too. Is this the first time we're learning that the Room of Requirement doesn't show up on the Marauders map, or did
no,
we already
they
know that?
No, we knew it.
Okay.
Harry had known this before when they first started to use the map.
Gotcha.
Harry also believes that it's not a variety of students, but it's just Crabbe and Goyle using a bunch of polyjuice potion that Malfoy stole because Slughorn used it for class, which... man.
Polyjuice again. Oh my God. Every book.
Yeah, it's used a lot. And it's one of those things where you can never really rule anything out, especially with the fuck shit that they pulled in Goblet of Fire.
Yes.
Not that I'm bitter that it wasn't Ludo Bagman, but like at any point, at any point, you can just think, well, you know, could be polyjuice, but you can never rule it out, which I have said for this book. I think that the Stan Shunpike thing was Malfoy using polyjuice. So the fact that this is actually being used by Malfoy gives me more credibility there, but we'll see. Because you're right, it's just very easy anytime to think, well, maybe it's polyjuice potion.
Yeah. The thing is, like, we learned in book two that it takes like a really long time to make, and mm-hmm. it's really difficult to make.
Yes.
And it's like, now all of a sudden it's super readily available to anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you gotta think that the other people that have used it since then have been Barty Crouch Jr., who's a Death Eater, so he probably could have just put all his effort.
Well, that was calculated, yeah. But he needed to drink that shit like every hour.
Yeah, they needed a lot of it.
He needed like a huge, the cauldron size that they use in Goblet of Fire to like throw Voldemort in and bring him back to life.
Mm-hmm.
He needed that much of polyjuice.
Maybe it was the same cauldron, we don't know.
You know, repurposing, yeah. Voldemort's
recycle.
Like, where am I gonna get a huge cauldron?
We're very environmentally friendly here in the Death Eaters.
Barty Crouch Jr.'s like, I got one.
Yeah. They mention that Malfoy has probably stole it from Slughorn because he needed a bunch for class. So I guess no one has taken the time like the squad did in book two, where it took him half the damn book.
Yeah, they were brewing it for like months.
Mm-hmm. It took him a really long time. Also, they were 12, so they weren't very good.
Yeah, but no, it had to do something with like full moons and shit, I remember.
Yeah, and there were like obviously very convenient reasons to make the book work because the books always have to be resolved at the end of the school year.
Right. If it was less involved, she could have just figured out to make polyjuice potion like closer to the date.
Sure. But yeah, there were things that made it take longer.
But at the same time, I'm like, from playing the Harry Potter game now, like, and you go mm-hmm. to potions class, there are so many other potions that we know nothing about,
yes.
But polyjuice potion is like
the one. Indeed it is. Hermione then remembers the girl with the scales, says, oh, so you're telling me that was either Crabbe or Goyle? Mm-hmm. Harry says, yeah, it's probably a warning system where dropping the scales tips off Malfoy to not come out of the room. Hermione is upset by this because, oh, great, now Harry's going to have another thing to obsess over. But again, tells him, just focus on getting the memory, and then she goes to bed.
Stop obsessing over Malfoy.
Just drop it. So the next day, they are at breakfast. They're reading The Prophet. Ron asks the classic question, is it anybody we know? Hermione says, yes, but it's not death. Mundungus Fletcher has been arrested for impersonating an Inferi during an attempted burglary, which I think is nice because you have to think, this is Mundungus Fletcher impersonating being a corpse.
Yeah.
Like he's pretending to be a zombie, which is hilarious. I love Mundungus Fletcher so much.
He's crazy.
I love him. The other news in The Prophet is that someone by the name of Octavius Pepper has vanished, and a 9-year-old boy tried to kill his grandparents, and he was believed to be under the Imperius Curse, which that is very serious.
That's crazy. crazy.
So we don't know, learn anything more about those yet. So Harry goes to the Room of Requirement while Hermione is in ancient runes class and Ron is working on his essay. And he can't get in. He first tries thinking, I need to see what Malfoy is doing in there. It doesn't work. He then tries thinking, I need to see the place Malfoy keeps coming secretly. That doesn't work. Harry gets upset at this point. He goes, oh, come off it. That was a clear instruction. Fine, which is great. I can fully sympathize with yelling at inanimate objects when they don't do what you need them to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like stub your toe on a door and then you smack the door like it was the door's fault and not your fault for running your damn foot into a not moving object. The book then has a very fun quote, which is, Harry tried every variation of, I need to see what Draco Malfoy is doing inside you, which, whoa, whoa, Harry. Okay there, bud. What Let's take this back
Tom.
A step.
Hey.
So Harry apparently tries for an entire hour with no luck. He tries for so long that he's late for Defense Against the Dark Arts class, which loses him 10 points from Gryffindor. Get it together,
oh
Harry.
My God.
Come
He's
on.
He's always losing points. He always
but he
makes
also
up
gains
for
them.
It when, yeah, when he saves the world after the end of every book, he makes up
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. Yeah, he's very frustrating. It's very much like us in the Harry Potter iPhone game, where we do lose the most points, but also, I'm sorry, I just earned our house 698 points, and nobody else is even in the top 50, so it's frustrating. So Seamus, during Dada class, asks Snape about the difference between a ghost and an Inferius because of what he saw in the paper. Snape says it wasn't actually an Inferius, it was just that smelly sneak thief, Mundungus Fletcher. And I'm sorry, Snape, how dare you speak ill of Mundungus Fletcher? He's got his problems, but he is not a smelly sneak thief. He is above this. And Harry raises the very good point where he whispers to the squad, shouldn't they be on the same side since they're both in the order? Which I agree with. It's very weird that Snape is dissing someone that's supposed to be at least on the same team as him.
What? You know Sirius and James used to be in the order.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hates them.
This is true.
He hates everyone in the order. He's just, like, forced to be in it.
Yeah, I guess Dumbledore kind of makes him be in it to make sure he's not.
He's not
defecting.
He's not really like around. Obviously, he knows the location,
yes.
But like he's not really around the meetings or anything. I feel like he and Dumbledore have like their own meetings, but you know, he's like the double agent, so he can't like be there too often because he's got to report back to Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good point. While Harry is whispering this to the squad, Snape overhears him and says, oh, clearly Harry Potter has a lot of thoughts on this subject. Harry, why don't you answer Seamus's question? Harry goes, I guess ghosts are transparent, and Snape gives him a bunch of crap for it, saying that this is a very obvious thing. Harry tries to defend himself, though, saying, well, yeah, I get that saying ghosts are transparent isn't profound, but inferior dead bodies and ghosts aren't, so inferior would be solid, ghosts would be see-through, right? Snape dunks on him again, though, giving this overly long description about, oh, this is what gives the full Merriam-Webster definitions of inferi and ghosts.
Right.
And then Ron steps up and says, well, what Harry said is the most useful if we're trying to tell them apart. When we come face-to-face with one in a dark alley, we're going to be having a shufti to see if it's solid, aren't we? We're not going to be asking, excuse me, are you the imprint of a departed soul? Which, I love that Ron did this.
So sassy. Like, I know you hate Snape, but he is still a teacher, and that's sassy.
Super sassy. And I love Snape is so sassy, so I love responding to Snape's sass with more sass.
I know. I wish Snape, like, respected the sass, though.
He should. If you're going to dish it, you got to receive it.
He should be like, touche, Ron, touche.
There have been multiple times where someone in the class has made a good insult, and then his comeback is just 10 points from Gryffindor, which is not a good comeback. You would think if he's going to take so much time to make fun of his students, if someone does a good comeback, he's got to be like, all right, that's valid.
Yeah.
But he does not. There's also a very interesting part of this quote is that Ron uses the word shufti, which is a British term, meaning that we are going to depart to our newly minted segment of British quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James. And this is the part where I'll edit in that.
I liked how you did that.
And now it is time for British quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
So
I don't think this word is in circulation anymore. If it is, it's not where I'm from. It means to have a look at something. To have a shufti at something means to have a look at something. And apparently it came from British soldiers that were based in the Middle East. So, bit of history for you. But I had to Google that. So I'm just as in the dark as you are.
This has been British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James. Thanks, Dottie. Gosh. Oh, wow. Isn't she wonderful?
Wonderful. So informative.
I'm so glad we have her on board. So Ron loses 10 points from Gryffindor for saying this, but completely worth it.
Yes.
After class, later on in the bathroom, Moaning Myrtle crashes Ron and Harry talking, and she talks about some sensitive boy that has been crying in the bathroom about being bullied. But Harry can't get any more information about who this is because Ron keeps kind of poking fun at her. And at one point, she says that she's not going to tell Harry who it is because I said I would take his secret to the, and Ron butts in, surely not to the grave, to the sewers maybe, which another very good joke
Zinger.
By Ron here.
Yeah.
So she gets very upset. She dives through the toilet. And important note, she makes the water move when she does it. So here's an interesting question. Is Moaning Myrtle a poltergeist? Because she can make objects move.
I don't know.
I did a quick bit of Googling and there was no confirmation, but people did note that in the books, anytime that she gets very upset or very emotional, she can make some things move. Like I think in the second book, she makes the faucets move or something. So she very much is following the rules from Patrick Swayze's Ghost, where if you try really hard, you can make stuff move. Not necessarily like Peeves being a full-fledged poltergeist where you can just make stuff move at will.
Yeah.
So I do find it interesting that Moaning Myrtle technically is kind of powerful.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, she's just an interesting character all around, I feel like.
Agreed. Lots of questions raised around her.
Very much so.
Well, we'll just have to wait for the Moaning Myrtle spinoff book.
Well, besides Peeves and then Moaning Myrtle because she died there, but then the rest of the ghosts, it's just one per house, right?
Well, you have, or is the Baron associated to a house? I know you've nearly had this
Nick.
Yeah,
I think he's Slytherin.
Oh, okay. So yeah, maybe it is just, I know they do have house ghosts. There are some other ones though, because when Nearly Headless Nick has his death day party, there's a bunch of ghosts in attendance.
Oh, that's true.
But I don't know if they fly in from outside of Hogwarts. I think there are other ghosts. I think we just don't really care about them.
Yeah, well, it's just like, if ghosts can like travel from other places, it's like, why does Myrtle stay there? Like, that's the craziest part.
I guess it's got to be the ghost thing where just the lore of ghosts is that you hover or haunt, so to speak, wherever you died. So maybe she has some sort of connection to the location of her death. Or she just likes creeping on boys in the bathroom, like when she creeped on Harry in the prefect bathroom.
She loves doing that.
Getting those sneak peeks. Hermione and Ron are leaving to go to the extra lessons at Hogsmeade. Hermione again tells Harry to focus on the memory. Harry then says that he's tried, but Slughorn keeps dodging him. Harry tries to hang back after class, and Slughorn always gathers his things and gets away. So Harry has put in an effort, but it just hasn't been working for him.
Mm-hmm.
When they leave, Harry pulls out the Marauder's map, and he notices that Goyle is on the seventh floor. So he knows that something might be going down with the Room of Requirement. So Harry runs up, sees the little girl with the scales, and Harry runs up and says, hello, you're very pretty, aren't you? So Goyle clearly knows what's going on. Honestly, I was surprised that Harry was right. I was waiting for this to just all blow up in Harry's face and it not actually be a Polyjuice Potion thing, but he is right because Goyle screams and runs away.
He hits it on the nose with that one, and it's pretty impressive because he's really not usually that intuitive.
Or correct about anything.
It's usually like Hermione's the one that figures it all out. So the fact that Harry actually figured it out is pretty impressive.
It really
is. I think it shows like maturity and it shows like that he is, I don't know, he is a better wizard maybe than we even give him credit for. Because obviously like a lot of what he does is luck driven, I feel like.
Yes, completely.
Yeah, but I feel like maybe she's like JK is trying to imply like, no, he is actually decent, you know?
Yeah, because at least in his description earlier in this chapter when he's talking about why he thinks it's them using Polyjuice, he at least has reasoning behind everything.
Yeah.
Whereas if you compare it to what he did in the fifth book when he thought that Voldemort was attacking Sirius in the Department of Mysteries, that was much more brash and quick judgment and not really thinking it through. Whereas for this one, Harry clearly has his reasonings for everything. Even going back with the Malfoy Dark Mark thing, he at least, whether or not he's right, he has things that are more thought through that can actually be proof behind his theory rather than just kind of jumping on instinct. So yes, it does show a bit of maturity by Harry.
Here. And I also feel like, I mean, he wants to be an Auror, and I feel like they're kind of detectives in a way.
Yeah, so, they're like wizard detectives slash cops.
Yeah, so it's like kind of, you know, implying that he has the necessary skill set, I guess.
I like it. I like that a lot. Yeah, I really hope he's right about everything, because I really do want him just to have a whole run of telling people told you so. So Goyle runs away screaming. Harry then is convinced that Malfoy is going to be in the Room of Requirement. So he tries to will the door to show up, but he's unsuccessful. He gets frustrated and kicks the place where the door should be. And he stubs his toe and is basically hopping up and down in pain. And while this is happening, Tonks walks into the hallway. And Tonks is confused that Harry is there, asks him what he's doing there. Harry asks her what she's doing there.
Wait, what are you doing here?
Exactly. She says that she was looking to find Dumbledore, hoping that he could help her understand what's going on with all of the news of people getting hurt. Harry says, yeah, you know, I've heard about it in the Prophet. And she says, well, the Prophet actually is a couple days behind what's currently going on. She was hoping to talk to Dumbledore, but he's out from the castle, again, in classic Dumbledore fashion.
He's got shit to do.
Yeah, he's a very important man with important fish to fry. And she asks if anyone from the Order has written to Harry. Harry says that since Sirius died, no one has written to him. And once he says the word Sirius, she starts to tear up. And no, Tonks. She basically finds an excuse to leave. And Hermione and Ron come back from their lessons and they're talking about it. First, we learn that Hermione absolutely killed the lessons, though.
Are we surprised? I mean...
Oh, no, not at all. Of course
obviously,
not.
Obviously, Hermione was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Ron says that she had perfect deliberation, divination, and desperation, or whatever the hell it is. One out of three. So a solid 33% for Ron there. He's going to do great on his apparition test. Ron says that he's surprised that the instructor didn't pop the question to Hermione, which... is so good. Hermione asks what Harry did while they were gone. Harry is honest, says that he kept trying the Room of Requirement thing, but he does mention his interaction with Tonks. And Hermione wonders why Tonks has left her post since she's supposed to be watching Hogwarts, but she was in Hogwarts. So did she really leave her post?
Well, I think she's actually stationed in Hogsmeade.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, all those kids were there for the apparition test. Hermione's like, why isn't she watching my back?
Oh, okay, okay, right, okay. Yeah. I was wondering why Hermione was so put off by this. Now it makes sense. Right, okay. So Harry asks the squad if Tonks was in love with Sirius, which is explaining why she's so sad, but aren't they cousins?
Yeah, they are, but... you know.
But what, they're not from Alabama or something? Like,
well, you know, the pureblood thing, they are.
Oh, yeah, there is a lot of inbreeding.
Well, she's not, but Sirius is.
I don't know. I just felt this was weird.
Obviously, her mom is, she's sisters with Bellatrix and Narcissa. How are they related to Sirius? They're his aunts.
I'm double checking.
Right?
I'm literally Googling, are Sirius and Tonks cousins? It says, according to the Black family tree,
like
Sirius Black
cousins.
And Andromeda Tonks are first cousins, meaning that Nymphadora Tonks is Sirius's first cousin once removed. Is that creepier or less creepy than second cousins? We have zero cousins, Megan, so
we are not the right
people to talk about. We need resident cousin expert.
First cousins once removed, I think that might be less creepy. I think legally you're allowed to marry your second cousin.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't make it okay.
No, I agree 100%. But in the wizarding pure blood world, they don't give a shit. So
Sirius and Andromeda are first cousins. So then Tonks is her daughter.
Yeah.
So first cousin once removed.
Yes, yes, you're right. Okay, because Sirius is cousins with Tonks' mom.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's still pretty
then
creepy.
Then what is a second cousin? Okay, so now I'm going to Google second cousin versus
first
cousin once removed. Google says, the degree of cousinhood, first, second, etc., denotes the number of generations between two cousins and their nearest common ancestor. The term removed refers to the number of generations separating the cousins themselves. So your first cousin once removed is the child or parent of your first cousin. Okay, so your second cousin I think your second cousin is less creepy than your first cousin once removed.
I think the way you described it, I think they might be the same thing.
I'm trying to, there's an infographic
once
now.
First cousin once removed is like the proper way to say
oh no,
it.
This is a YouTube video.
Oh, no.
This if only we had... I'm kind of glad we don't have cousins.
Yeah, we don't have any cousins. Well, we have, like, first cousin once removed, I think, but...
Okay, oh, so, okay, here it is. We do have first cousins. No, we... We don't because we don't have any cousins to begin with.
We don't have any first cousins.
Yeah. So your second cousin is technically the child of a first cousin once removed, kind of. Because your second cousin, it has your great grandma, then your great uncle, then their kid is your first cousin once removed, and then their kid is your second cousin. So your second cousin is less creepy than your first cousin once removed.
Well, it's less creepy in the fact that they're less related to you, but it's more creepy in the fact that there's like a 2-generation age gap.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all depends on years and stuff where it could be, they could end up being the same age as you. Yeah. Actually, your first cousin once removed has a higher chance of being younger than you, according to this graph. But yeah, so technically, this is creepier than them being second cousins, but not as creepy as them being first cousins. Regardless, I don't think the tongue should be in love with him.
Yeah.
Because I think it's creepy.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a theory.
Yes. Harry's theory for this is rooted in her Patronus being Sirius's Patronus, because there's the theory that if you love someone, your Patronus can change into whatever theirs is.
But it could also be like a sisterly type love or something is how I always looked at it. Like I
what
never,
Harry thinks he has for Ginny.
No monster inside of Tonks is freaking out.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't know. Like even in the order, I guess we don't really see the adults interact with each other as
not much.
I just don't think they were like, you know, maybe that close, but maybe I'm...
Yeah, you really didn't get the vibe that they were super close or buddy-buddy, so I don't know if the book will describe this later, why she's so sad about it, but I'm currently very confused. Yeah. Ron, in response to this, says, oh, women, they're just easily upset, and Hermione claps back with, I doubt you'd find a woman who sulked for half an hour because Madame Rose Murta didn't laugh at their joke, and... I am now fully convinced that Madame Rose Murta is involved because we're getting way too much Madame Rose Murta mention in this book because we've heard about her like once or twice in the entire series and now we're getting her 2 times in not that many chapters between themselves. I think that she's involved. I think that my wild theory about the 3 broomsticks being involved in the cursed items is true, and I will die on this hill like I died on the Ludo Bagman hill if it is, but I just think we're giving too much play to this character that we previously just didn't give a damn about, and now we're talking about her too much.
Well, we've always known Ron has had a crush on her.
Is it that it's a crush? I think they mentioned that she's attractive before, but I don't think they really go into the crush thing until earlier in this book.
I think it's just Ron being Ron. Hormonal. I think he acts the same way around Rose Murta as he does around Fleur.
Yeah. Okay, I could see it. I just have the tendency to notice red flags when it's too much attention paid to a character that doesn't seem important.
Yeah.
This is why I thought Ludo Bagman was a bad guy. This is why I was freaked out by the girl with the scales, who now we learn is a Polyjuice Potion person. So when there's too many sentences about someone that seems like they don't need to be there, I get suspicious, and that's why I'm suspicious here. But yeah, we will see what happens. But that is the end of chapter 21, and now we get into chapter 22, after the burial. Whoa, there, past Mike. Let's pump the brakes just for a second, because it's time for Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Backblaze. Look, it's the 21st century. You have a laptop with a lot of important information on it. And if that laptop unexpectedly died, you'd be crushed. And it should be easy to back up your computer. But you know what's even easier than that? Closing the notification that says you haven't backed up your computer in 85 days. That's where Backblaze comes in. For just $5 a month, they do unlimited cloud backup for Macs or PCs. And it's great. They back up your documents, music, photos, videos, drawings, literally everything. And then you can restore the files
anywhere. You can either get a directly download zip file, or if you need something physical to make it work, they will FedEx overnight you a USB or a hard drive, and then you can send it back when you're done to get a refund on that. Backblaze has saved over 30 billion files, which is ridiculous. So my listeners can go to backblaze.com/potterless and get a 15-day free trial where you get the full feature. It's not some trial version. You get to do everything, see how it works, see if you like it, and then if you do, $5 a month. That is nothing. That is like less than two coffees. It's very good and secure, and you don't have to worry about getting up and plugging in your hard drive and waiting all the time for it to work. And this ease of use is crucial for me because I have a lot of important files for this podcast on my computer, and there was one time when I thought to myself, I should back up my computer, and I got up and I walked to get my external hard drive out of my closet, and by the time I came back to my laptop, it died. So Backblaze is great. It just gives you that nice peace of mind, and it's only $5 a month. So again, go to backblaze.com/potterless to get that 15-day free trial with full features to their entire service.
And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless.
Chapter 22, After the Burial, which is pretty sad because the chapter title gives it away that Aragog died. So that's unfortunate.
Is it unfortunate, though? Do we like him?
That is, I've had such a struggle when I was reading this chapter because part of me is thinking, oh man, I don't want Hagrid to be sad. But the other part of me is thinking is this spider wanted to murder Ron and Harry for basically no good reason. And their only justification for not murdering them was, well, you're friends with Hagrid, so I guess I won't eat you.
This time.
I don't know, but yeah, I don't know if I like this guy or not. If it was Fang or if it was Buckbeak / Witherwings, obviously I would
obviously
be heartbroken.
Yes.
But Aragog, it's, whatever.
No. You like feel bad that Hagrid's sad, and that's the extent of it. You definitely don't feel bad that Aragog has died.
No, I just don't want to see Hagrid sad. So the chapter opens with a great quote from Hermione, which is, for the last time, just forget about Malfoy. I'm sorry, Hermione. I don't know if you've read the books, but that's not going to happen. So Ron and Hermione are reading a pamphlet called Common Apparition Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. This is the worst sequel of the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them franchise.
Oh my gosh.
So they're reading this pamphlet because the test is coming up soon. Ron hides behind Harry and Hermione when he hears a girl coming down the hallway, and Hermione, without moving a muscle, just goes, it isn't lavender, which clearly shows that this is a common theme that has been happening.
Yeah, he's just avoiding her.
He totally is. So this little girl walks around and hands Harry a rolled up piece of parchment, which makes me think, oh, hell yeah, another Dumbledore session, but it's way worse.
Yeah. I mean, we know he's not supposed to have another one until he gets the memory. Mm-hmm. So
exactly. But I had false hope. And even Harry thinks, I'm not supposed to have a meeting with Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. And he's right. So the note is actually from Hagrid. The note is filled with tears, like tear marks all over that are smudging the ink, which
don't
is so
just
sad.
I love that it's like the biggest, burliest character is like such a teddy bear.
He's such a softie.
He's such a softie.
I love it. It's much like Captain Holt in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which we were just talking about how you should watch the show. But on that show, he's this big, intimidating, deep voice black guy. His character is this openly gay cop in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So you have this guy who is supposed to be very intimidating and deep. And then when you first learn he's gay, he's like, didn't you know that I was gay? I made it very obvious. So that, and similarly on that show, Terry Crews, you know, big muscle dude, he plays a cop that is just terrified of everything. Mm-hmm. He's scared of going in duty, doesn't want to use his gun, all this other stuff. So it's really fun when you have these characters that completely flip the script on you. So yes, the fact that there's this giant who can tackle these huge beasts of all sorts
is
a big half giant is a big softy. So yeah, it's really sad. The note just has tears all over it, and basically it says that Aragog has passed away and that he is going to have a burial for him tonight because dusk was Aragog's favorite time of day. So Harry is thinking about it. Ron and Hermione think Hagrid is crazy.
Well, yeah, he says, I know you're not supposed to be out that late, but you can use the invisibility cloak. Yep. And Hermione's like, that's asking a little much, Hagrid. Like, it's kind of dangerous out there. I don't know if you know, but Voldemort is looking to kill Harry at all times.
Yeah. So it's funny because Ron and Hermione have the same reaction of, oh my gosh, Hagrid's crazy, but for completely different reasons. Hermione, for these reasons, just logistically, it doesn't make sense. They could get in trouble. It's asking a lot. Ron's entire reasoning is, that spider tried to murder me. Fuck this.
So I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah, it's really fun. Hermione thinks he's crazy. She says, we've risked a lot to help Hagrid, and after all, Aragog's dead. If it were a question of saving him, and Ron butts in, I'd want to go even less, Ron said firmly. So Ron is very staunchly taking a I am not a fan of giant spiders stance, which I cannot blame him for.
Yeah, he says, Hermione, believe me, being dead will have improved him a lot.
God, Ron is so good. So Hermione thinks that Harry shouldn't go to the burial. Harry's mulling it over. She thinks that he should just keep trying to get the memory out of Slughorn. Harry says, oh yeah, am I going to get lucky on the 47th time? And Ron says, lucky, lucky, that's it. And Ron has a brilliant idea. He suggests that Harry should use Felix Felicis, which makes so much sense. I am so happy. That is brilliant, Ron. That is absolutely brilliant.
I know. And I'm glad that she let Ron figure that one out.
It's not even a charity thing. He figured it out on his own.
I'm saying JK.
Oh, you mean JK Rowling. Yes.
Yeah, because that is such a Hermione thing to think about. But the fact that she let Ron do it, I think it's a good idea.
And it's so Ron because he came upon it by accident. Yeah. Harry said the word lucky really sassily and Ron thought about it for a second,
and also,
which is
I guess,
so
like,
good.
Ron was the one who fake got the lucky potion.
True.
So
yeah.
He probably thinks about it more.
Yeah, for sure. So Harry says he wanted to save it, and Hermione says, what could possibly be more important than this? And Harry obviously thinks about Ginny.
Oh, what an idiot.
Just classic Harry. So finally he snaps out of it, says that he will try again to convince Slughorn in potions class, but if that fails, he will skip the burial and use the Felix Felicis on Slughorn that night. So the squad then sees some more girls walk by. Ron first dodges, thinking that it's going to be Lavender. It is not. But the girls that walk by are very sad, and they are the Montgomery sisters, apparently, who are sad because their 5-year-old brother was murdered by Fenrir Greyback. A bit of a downer.
Just a little bit.
Just very abrupt. Hermione's like, oh yeah, of course they're sad. Their brother just got murdered. Whoa, okay, cool, wow. So that happened. They don't talk about it anymore, so I don't know if the Montgomerys are important or if the whole purpose of this is just to know that Fenrir Greyback's murdering babies or toddlers.
Well, yeah, so it says he was attacked and then he died later in the hospital.
Yeah, but we knew that Fenrir does this. There was
so you know about him now.
Yeah, okay. They have a thing earlier on when Harry is talking to Lupin about how Fenrir sometimes purposely will wait around his prey while he's a human so that when he turns into a werewolf, he will attack people.
Yeah.
It's a conscious decision that he makes sometimes.
There's also, I feel like Lupin mentions this, but because of the way he attacks, it's almost like he's not even really fully human anymore. He remains semi-werewolf even without the moon kind of thing.
Yeah, it's
which
not
is
a
just
good look.
Creepy. Yeah.
No, I don't like Fenrir Greyback at all. I hope he gets defeated.
Yeah.
Yeah, big hot take if I liked him. Well, he seems like a nice guy.
Well, I mean, he's one of the Death Eaters.
True. Very true. He's not good. Not good at all. Ron and Hermione then leave to take their apparition test. Harry goes to a potions class that consists only of himself, Ernie, and Malfoy because the three of them are too young to take the exam.
Okay, and I have to point this out. What about Neville?
Is he? Oh.
Because they're born in the same month. Oh, but you know what? Maybe Neville isn't taking potions anymore.
He's not.
Now
yeah,
I think
Neville.
About it.
No.
Okay.
He's not taking potions. He was going to try to, but he ended up changing to doing Transfiguration instead.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, we know that Neville is obviously born in the same month as Harry because of the prophecy.
Because of the prophecy.
So, never mind.
I also would not be surprised if Neville would be too afraid to take the apparition exam knowing Neville.
Yeah.
The lesson of this class is to make whatever potion that they want. Harry decides to make a euphoria potion, which he finds in his Half-Blood Prince copy of Advanced Potion Making. And there's this great moment where when he finishes, Slughorn comes over and is like, oh my goodness, this is so amazing. How would you come up with this? Because Harry does this thing where he adds mint in it. Like, oh, no one would have ever thought to add mint in it to soothe the throat, blah, blah, blah. And Harry instinctively shoves the textbook into his backpack with his foot. But what Slughorn actually says is, unless you're taking some hints from your mother, et cetera, et cetera. But I just love the moment of Harry going, oh shit.
I have to say, like, this pisses me off so much. As a mother, this really angers me because every time Harry's around Lupin or Sirius, RIP, or whoever, he's like, tell me about my dad. What's my dad like? Tell me all about my dad. And he legit has this professor who is obsessed with his mom and never asks anything about her. He does not give a shit about his mother.
Who is definitely, from what we've learned, she's much better than James.
Yes, and who legit died for him. Legit.
Yes. No disrespect to James, but it's kind of Lily that did the thing.
She gave you life by birthing you and then gave you life again by dying instead of you. You ungrateful little twat.
Preach.
How do you not ask Slughorn questions about Lily? It just, like, it is mind-blowing. And even when we go through the chapter further, he has so many opportunities to ask anything about her, and he never does. He just does not care.
He doesn't at all. Well, Megan, if you end up having a little boy, my nephew, I will make sure that he loves you and asks questions about you.
It's just like, I mean, it's very silly. I can't be the only one that notices that. Like, she gets no love.
No, I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't notice it until now, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah, and Sirius and Lupin, they're all like, oh, your mother was so nice and everyone loved her and blah, blah, blah. And like,
tell me about my piece of shit dad that used to bully people for no reason.
Yes. Doesn't make any sense to me. Whatever. It's super dumb.
Harry. Well, I mean, it's Harry. He's an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, duh.
So he tries to convince Slughorn to drink the euphoria potion after class, but Slughorn does his maneuver where he packs all his stuff and just pieces out as soon as he can. Mm-hmm. This means that Harry is going to have to use Felix on Slughorn in the evening. So Hermione and Ron get back from the test.
Well, he's going to have to use it on himself. He's not going to
Yes, exactly. I mean, he's going to use it on himself for the purpose of trying to get the memory out of Slughorn that night. So Ron and Hermione get back. Hermione passed the test, of course.
Were we skeptical about that? No.
No, we had no doubt. No doubt at all. Ron came really close, but the examiner noticed that he left behind half of an eyebrow. So he has to try it again. And Ron is frustrated with how close he was, doesn't think that's that big of a deal. So they go to dinner after, and the three of them just spend the entire meal just dunking on the instructor, which is true friends. The best friend thing you can just, oh, that instructor's such an idiot, blah, 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 blah.
He should have passed you.
Yeah, exactly.
Who cares about an eyebrow?
Mm-hmm, for sure. So Harry then takes the Felix Felicis potion, and he gets this overwhelming feeling to go by the burial. Hermione and Ron question him, but he says, I'm just feeling it. It feels like it's the right place to be. I just want to go.
Yeah. First of all, I just have to point out that Ron tries to tell Harry what the potion's like when you take it. And Hermione's like, you never really took it, bud.
Yeah, but I felt like I did. So it's basically the same thing, right? Ron is so pure. Oh, so basically, Harry turns into Peter Parker from Spider-Man 3 after he gets the black symbiote, and he gets all jazzy and is like snapping at people down the hallway.
He's living his best life for sure.
He's living his truth. So he puts on the invisibility cloak and leaves the room. When he leaves the room that they are in, Lavender sees Hermione and Ron there and says, what are you doing in there with her? Which is great. Yes. It gets even better. better, though, because as he sneaks out of the Gryffindor common room through the painting, he sneaks between Ginny and Dean, who are entering through the portrait hole, and he accidentally bumps into Ginny, which she doesn't realize because Harry is wearing the invisibility cloak. But this sparks an argument between her and Dean. She says that Dean is always pushing her and that he's being impatient. So as he leaves, they're having a bit of a tiff between each other, and Harry feels really happy about this while he's walking away, which is great. So while he's continuing down, he gets the inspiration to walk past the vegetable garden. And basically the sense that we get from Felix Felicis is that you just get these urges and you can't explain why you feel them, but yeah. It just feels right to do something and you just do it. And then we learn that it just works out. You just kind of let him take the wheel and you just go along for the ride.
Right.
And it works. So he goes by the vegetable garden and he overhears Sprout and Slughorn having a conversation. We learn in this conversation that Sprout's first name is Panoma. I don't know if this was mentioned earlier, if I just didn't notice, but I think Panoma is a really nice name. Panoma Sprout has a nice ring to it. They are talking about some sort of plant that Slughorn wants to use for a future class, and eventually Sprout leaves, so it's just Slughorn there. And once she's out of eyesight, Harry dramatically removes the invisibility cloak, which scares Slughorn.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and he is shocked and realizes that Harry is out after dark, so he reminds Harry, hey, you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing here? Harry then explains the whole Hagrid situation, and this convinces Slughorn to go with him because Aragog is a acromantula, and the venom from acromantulas are very valuable. So Slughorn selfishly wants to get some of that venom to make some of that bank.
We know that everything Slughorn does is for his own personal gain.
Yes, this seems very Mundungus Fletcher-y of him, but he's being opportunistic and wants to make that bank. So Slughorn says that he is going to change his tie because the one he is wearing is not appropriate for a funeral, and he's going to go grab some booze while he's at it so they can drink. And he has this great thing where he's like, well, we can't drink to his health. We'll drink him off.
Well, at least he's being like, you know, he's going to go make some money off of stealing this venom, I guess.
The least that he can do.
But yeah, at least he's trying to be like a good guy and like pay him in a different way for it, I guess.
Yeah, it's the least that he can do. So he leaves, Harry goes up to Hagrid's hut, and once Hagrid opens the door, he very much appreciates that Harry decided to come through. Harry asks if they're going to bury Aragog in the forest, and Hagrid says no because the spiders won't let him near that area anymore. And he says, turns out it was only his orders that they didn't eat me. Can you believe that, Harry? And the narrator goes, the honest answer was yes. So then Slughorn shows up, and him being there is a pleasant surprise to Hagrid, but Hagrid says Aragog would have liked him being there. Harry thinks that Aragog would have liked the ample amount of edible flesh that he provided most, which, boom, narrator Harry just killing it with the sass. As they are preparing for the burial itself, Harry hears a bottle tinkle when Slughorn bends over to look at Aragog's face, so I'm assuming this is when he takes the venom from Aragog. And after this, Hagrid rolls Aragog into the pit in the garden that he has made, and then they go inside to, you know, toast to Aragog's life. Slughorn says before they drink, don't worry, I've tested everything ever since what happened to your poor friend Rupert, which is great. But he says that the testing method that they used was that he had a house elf take a sip from everything. That's not cool. You can't just think that house elves are disposable. Like, there's still...
Okay, you have to understand. I mean, obviously, everyone from Slytherin in these books is evil.
And most are racist.
Yeah. So Slughorn is probably the nicest Slytherin we ever meet.
So far.
But, like, there are points where JK still has to remind us that, oh, yeah, he's still a Slytherin.
This is, again, Harry has the thought about Hermione with Spew. This has happened a couple times in the past few chapters. So I'm assuming Spew will make some sort of a comeback because it really hasn't been mentioned in this book at all.
No, yeah, I mean,
it was a big deal in 5 and not so much here. So I don't know if it's going to come back, but I hope it does. I'm really starting to feel bad for house elves because they really are treated so poorly.
Yeah, I think it's just to, like, close the gap between some of these other beasts and the wizards. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just house elves either.
Oh, wizards are mean to anyone that's not a wizard.
Yeah, and I think that's just, like, growing because, like, Voldemort's recruiting certain animals.
Yeah.
Or other beings.
Yes.
So, like, the good guys have to recruit some, and some are choosing to stay out of it because it should only be a wizard's thing.
Yeah. Hagrid and Slughorn get pretty toasty.
Hell yeah.
Literally, because they start making all these outlandish toasts, even to Harry becomes a subject of one of the toasts.
Right. And Felix tells Harry not to drink.
Which so is every smart.
Time, yeah. So every time they toast, Harry's, like, fake drinking. So that he can concentrate.
Which is a common theme of Harry Potter. He does this multiple times. He has fake drank when the tea that Umbridge gave him definitely had Veritas serum in it.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Definitely didn't do it there. And I feel like there was another time, but I think this... Oh, he didn't fake drink, but he definitely avoided the potion from Romilda. So... strategically not drinking or not eating is becoming a skill of Harry Potter. So, yeah, he doesn't end up drinking at all, which is smart, so he can be on his game because he has a task. Mm-hmm. Drunk Hagrid and drunk Slughorn start singing this slow, sad song about a dying wizard called Odo, and it makes Hagrid think about how Harry's parents went too soon. And Hagrid says, terrible, terrible, and then falls asleep. Harry then uses this against Slughorn, saying, oh, when he was talking about terrible, he's not talking about your singing, Slughorn. He's talking about my parents. He starts to tell Slughorn the details of their murder because Slughorn doesn't know the full thing. And this is when Felix just kicks it into gear full force, and Harry's just kind of along for the ride at this point.
Yeah, Harry's given all the gory details.
Yes.
Like he wasn't even 1 year old when it happened.
Yes.
He clearly doesn't remember all of this.
No, but. Not at all. Yeah, it's a great moment where Slughorn asks him, I don't suppose you remember it, Harry, he asks awkwardly, and Harry goes, no, well, I was only one when they died.
Yeah.
Not the brightest question. But yeah, he tells Slughorn that his dad died first. Slughorn didn't know this, so he explains the whole situation where James told Lily to get out of the way, and then Voldemort killed James, and then Voldemort went to kill Harry, and he tells Slughorn that Lily didn't have to do what she did. Voldemort didn't care about whether or not she lived. He would have been totally okay if she just ran away. But no, she stayed and protected him and ended up saving him because of his love.
Mm-hmm.
So Felix keeps leading him on more, playing on the fact that Slughorn really liked Lily.
Yeah, Harry's like, oh, you really liked her, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, and I'm like, okay, that's all you have to say about your mom? That's all?
Yeah, Slughorn is way more nice about Harry's mom than Harry is.
He goes
on this big
tangent mom.
About how she was great and she was so brave and she was wonderful.
I know, and Harry's like talking about how she was brutally murdered and then's like, oh, sorry, you liked her, didn't you?
Yeah.
And it's like, didn't you like her?
I mean, to be fair, Harry didn't know her. But this is why Harry needs to ask more questions about her so that he could like her memory. But
exactly.
Harry really goes on and he really kicks it into gear here. He lets Slughorn go on this big rambling tangent about how much he liked Lily. And then Harry goes, but you won't help her son. She gave me her life, but you won't give me a memory. And Slughorn says, don't say that. It's not a question. It's just that me telling you this memory won't do anything. And Harry says, well, it will and it can. Dumbledore needs the information. I need the information. I am the chosen one. I have to kill him. I need that memory. So really kicking it into gear.
Yeah, it's really the only time he's like laid it out like, mm-hmm. I am the chosen one. Like,
yeah.
I am Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, Slughorn even asks, you are the chosen one? And he goes, of course I am. And he keeps going on, saying things like, you don't want to get rid of the wizard who killed Lily Evans? Be brave like my mother, Professor. Just all these lines on and on, hitting him one after the other. And he finally kind of gets Slughorn to back down. Slughorn says, I am not proud. I'm ashamed of what the memory shows. I think I may have done some great damage that day. And then Harry says, you'd cancel out anything you did by giving me the memory, which I hope he doesn't actually believe. I hope he's just saying that to make Slughorn feel better and want to give the memory, because I don't know exactly what this memory did, but I can assume that Horcruxes are very bad. And I don't think that just telling him the memory undoes what he did, because clearly the information that he gave Tom Riddle was pretty significant.
Well, You'll see.
It does help him stop, but you can't, like, Voldemort has murdered a lot of people because of the Horcrux situation, I'm assuming. So you can't just be like, oh yeah, it's fine.
Well, you really have to wait and
see.
Yeah. But honestly, when you listen to the memory, I think Voldemort had a pretty good grasp on what it was.
And he probably would have gotten the information out of someone else anyway.
Well, no, it's kind of like he already knew and he was kind of asking like other questions that even Slughorn didn't really know. And it's almost like braggadocious in a way. So
I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
It's not really. Yeah. So honestly, Slughorn, I don't know. Like when you watch it, I don't know that I think he's just embarrassed by it. But honestly, I do think obviously like giving Harry the memory kind of does cancel out.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it cancels out, but it's the best thing to do. Like it's the closest thing you can do to righting the wrong is giving the information so that Harry and then Dumbledore can use it to defeat Voldemort. Because it's the only way to stop him is learning this.
I think like regardless of whether or not Slughorn and Voldemort had the conversation, it still would have happened.
Sure.
So the fact that Slughorn has this tidbit to give is probably even better.
Yeah, it is really
helpful. Makes sense.
Yeah, and no matter what, this is the right thing for Harry to say. Felix has totally kicked it in.
Yes,
it makes me think kind of like Ghostbusters when, I don't know what the girl's name is, but it's like, there is no Harry, only Felix. Clearly taken over. So this all eventually works. And Slughorn then willingly gives the memory, you know, puts the wand to his forehead, takes out the silvery film or whatever it is, milky substance, and then puts it into a little vial, hands it over to Harry, and then finally says to him, you're a good boy, and you've got her eyes, just don't think too badly of me once you've seen it. And then he falls asleep. And then that is the end of this chapter. But you mentioned before recording that the movie does this whole little Felix Felicis Slughorn apology differently, and you prefer it. So you let me know that it was spoiler free, and I watched the clip of it. And basically the two differences are that Harry plays hard to get, getting Slughorn to come with him rather than tell him exactly what's up. Slughorn's like, you can't be out here. And Harry's like, well, you might as well come with me.
Yeah. Well, and he also catches, like in the movie, he like catches Slughorn like sneaking plants.
Yes, he's trying to steal plants because they are apparently worth 10 galleons a leaf, which is a common theme of what Slughorn does later, because in the book, when he gets into Hagrid's hut, he takes note of how much all the things are worth, like this unicorn hair.
Yeah, he's talking about like the unicorn hair and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of funny. He's like not talking to Professor Sprout. Like he's already sneaking in doing something he's not supposed to do.
Which makes more sense of why Harry can be coy and kind of playful and egg him on to come with him.
But I like the part where Harry talks about the pincers. That's like,
and he does
my
the little finger
part.
Motion.
Yeah. Really, I am so obsessed with that scene.
But then the other difference, which is less funny and more heartfelt, is that when Slughorn talks about Lily, he tells this big story about
the fish and the water lily and how it died when Lily died. Like, it's kind of a beautiful story.
Yeah, so what was it? It was a water lily that turned into a fish, and then the same day that Lily passed away, that fish passed away. So I guess it's a representation of her.
Yes.
And yeah, it was this really sweet, heartfelt moment that I don't know if J.K. wrote it for the script or someone else did,
but
whoever did.
But it's beautiful.
It's very powerful.
And I was kind of like, when I reread the book, I was like, oh my God, that story's not in it? Like, that's such a beautiful metaphor story. I don't know. So I do have to say that little part of the movie, I think, almost did it better than the book.
It's one of the few times that the movie does something better than the books.
Yeah, very few. And honestly, like, the sixth movie is, like, basically just about the relationships. So the fact that they got that right is impressive.
I've heard it's not very good. I've heard it's weirdly rom-com-y.
It is weirdly rom-com-y, but it's also probably, like, it's got the most comic relief out of any movie. So.
I mean, this is one of the funnier books. There's a lot more moments that I've been laughing in this one than I have in other ones. But I think probably the other problem is so many people say that the sixth book is their favorite book.
Yeah.
That I think that so many people have high expectations for the movie. And then when you have the movie of their favorite book, they get let down. because you want it to be so good.
Yeah. They have to cut out so much, too.
They should have made two movies out of the sixth book.
Yeah.
Because it is shorter, but it's so dense. And you can, the real way you can tell that the chapters are more dense is just look at the episodes I do of Potterless. Because when I did book one, my first episode was 8 chapters. And then as I moved on, it slowly whittled down to where I was doing 4 chapters an episode, 3 chapters an episode. There have been a lot of episodes of Potterless for this book that have been 1 chapter. It took 2 episodes to discuss chapter 14.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much more happening in each chapter of this. There's definitely enough stuff to make 2 movies.
Definitely. And they had to cut out, like, they cut out some of the last couple chapters that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Those 2 visits, I guess, that he does with Dumbledore are cut out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know.
Well, I can't wait to hate it.
They keep in the first one, and they keep in, like, obviously the one you're about to see, which is like, oh, my God.
I'm so stoked.
I can't wait until you read the next chapter.
Yeah, I'm like, honestly, I'm going to, after we stop recording, I'm probably going to start reading the chapter because I am on the cliffhangery of cliffhangers right now.
Yeah, you have to read it now. You have to.
Yeah, that is the plan.
And then call me after you read it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it very soon. But that is the end of this chapter. That's the end of this episode of Potterless. So, Megan, how do you feel about chapters 21 and 22?
I'm very happy about it. I mean, I love those chapters, and I'm just really excited for you to read the next one. Because then there's, like, after you read that, there's not even that many spoilers left in the series.
Good. Yes, I don't know much about the next chapter, but by virtue of turning the page and putting my bookmark in, I saw that the title was Horcruxes, so I'm hype as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, obviously... You'll learn.
I would assume that I'm going to learn what they are.
Yeah.
I really hope I don't get the Dumbledore runaround where he's like, well, next time we meet Harry.
No, you'll see. He like runs to his office like right away.
Good. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. But Megan, thank you so much for being on. My own sister on Potterless. Look at this. Look how far we've come from me hating the books as a youngin and now... They are a very important part of my life as an adult.
Yes. And now it's like all we talk about.
It's fine. We've got a whole lot to make up for. We can have real, meaningful human interactions about our adult lives when I'm done. Yeah, bigger fish to fry. We got to talk about Harry Potter first, then we can be adults. But Megan, Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. Oh, no problem. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, before they toast to dead creatures, wizard on! If you want to see some funny pictures, behind-the-scenes content, and some spicy memes, you can check out Potterless on Instagram. It's instagram.com/potterlesspodcast. And through my posts and the stories, it's a whole bunch of fun content that you can't get anywhere else. Potterless was created by Mike Schubert. It is hosted by Mike Schubert. It is edited by Mike Schubert. It is produced by Mike Schubert, as well as Leanne Davis, Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Erica and Calvin Bauer, Sadie Bayer, Jesse Horgan, Natalie Klobuchar, Deborah Wilkins, Klaus Sirlopu, Alex Stark, Rebecca Adamick, Frank Chiodo, Marchismo, Tori Larsic, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfelio, Jenna Dowsett, Kieran Webb, Luis Misak, Akansha Saxena, Abid Ahmed, Killian Jordan Pontillo, Benjamin Bridges, Rosemary Dodge, Jill Boulay, Marie-Lisa C. Keen, Ariel Berg, Romina Rivadeneira, Camille Doc, Anthony Bonarigo, Diego Matienzo, Russell Dunk, Jenny Nilsson, Dustin Molenkuch, Katie Rogers, Audra Indiana Mercer, Eleanor Curlin, Cindy Cawthorn, Billy Houghton, Rossanne Batamana, Micah Cool, Andrea Franz, Nikita Power, Colette Smith, Chrissy Hutton, Trina Unadcat, Lala Palmer, Chelsea Green, Taylor Armstead, Sammy Curti, Lovekesh Longer, Shirvani Patel, Ellie Madsen, Cowmage, Cassandra Aponte, Roxy Chaos, Amelia Kraus, Sean Montag, Jeremiah E. Heard, Corny Allingham, Sarah Ning, Jesus J. Morales, Ben Silver, Francisco Batista, Rachel Guthrie, Mary Bushland, Zachary Polito, Gabrielle Medcroft, Jessica Ann, Natalie Jung, Arna Gutnadar, Brandy Baldonado, Melody McGinnis, Kristen Chavez, Jonathan Swanee, Lexi Vergara, Zach Ross Klein, Alicia Figueroa, Daisy Carton Sauter, Jessica Jacob, Orchid Grover, Jonathan Foy, Joe Harrison, Marcus Zeller, Isabel, Steve Trelower, Vivian Santos, Kim Klusmeyer, Samuel Miner, Ali Ravick, Sean Cho, Victoria Renee, Kalila Schultz, Elena, Heather Richardson, Takari Arant, Darlene Ruiz, Brenna Jackie Clear, and Drake Perez. Web design by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. You can find us on social media at facebook.com/potterless, Twitter is @potterlesspod, and instagram.com/potterless. For more information about the show, merchandise, and other podcasts that I've been a part of, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com. And again, for that bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/potterless. If you know someone who would love the show, why don't you tell them about it and help our little family grow? That really does help so much. But thank you so much for listening. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, wizard on!